This is the true story of a tall beauty named Linda, her celebrity dog trainer husband, Mark, and the twisted tale of their turbulent split.
He is desperate. He wants to save this relationship.
It's a story of betrayal.
This is an extremely liberating moment for her.
And the jealous rage.
Linda says he just turns into this thing she hasn't seen before.
That will fuel a calculated murder.
Immediately, the smell was just overpowering.
Beware. Extreme passion can lead to shocking consequences. It's 2005 on picturesque Kicket Island, about 50 miles north of Seattle, Washington.
Kicket Island is this small private island in the Puget Sound. It was this idyllic place. It was kind of a paradise.
This serene haven is home to 41-year-old, one-time junior Olympic equestrian, Linda.
Linda is the daughter of a very wealthy businessman. In fact, her dad owns Kicket Island.
Linda was tall, beautiful.
She is rugged and outdoorsy and really kind of looks like the natural beauty.
14 years earlier, Linda met her husband, local celebrity dog trainer, Mark Stover, when she hired him to train her dog. 53-year-old Mark is heralded as the dog whisperer of the Pacific Northwest.
He started building up a clientele of people who would bring their dogs to him. He had a long list of high-end clients.
I think of him as a larger-than-life man. When he loved big. And when he was angry, you knew about it.
Mark and Linda have a lot in common, including a shared love of the outdoors. But their relationship hasn't always been plain sailing.
When Linda first met him, she thought he was rather arrogant. But eventually, with his kind-heartedness and his charisma, he won her over, living with her for almost 11 years before they decide to tie the knot.
Together, the happy couple runs Island Dog Adventures, an upscale dog boarding kennel that caters to their wealthy clients' pampered canines. But their life on the island paradise is about to become a living hell. By the middle of 2005, Mark and Linda's three-year marriage is showing signs of strain.
She was gone a lot doing equestrian sports.
Linda claims she and Mark argue over money, even though their million-dollar business is booming. And over time, the fights between them become increasingly nasty and aggressive.
At a certain point, Linda feels like she can't take it anymore.
Worn out by the constant squabbling, Linda decides it's time to end her 14-year relationship and packs a bag to leave. But when she tells her husband of the decision, his growing anger finally boils over.
Linda says he just turns into this thing she hasn't seen before. He's clenching his fists. He's visibly shaking. He is about to erupt.
It's clear that Mark did not want to get a divorce and that Mark loved Linda very much. I believe truly that she broke his heart when she decided to leave.
Mark's extreme reaction terrifies Linda.
She was probably unprepared for the extremely rash behavior of Mark, and it left her very afraid for her safety.
Convinced she's doing the right thing, Linda makes her exit, leaving Mark furious and desperate. While she waits for the divorce to go through, Linda settles 150 miles away from Kicket Island, across the Cascade Mountains in Winthrop, Washington.
She feels this sense of relief. Now she can kind of start thinking about her future and going forward in her life without Mark.
She wants to feel safe, and finally, she does. She's far enough away, starting a whole new life. She's happy.
Linda feels she's now finally free from her soon-to-be ex-husband's aggressive demands. But despite the distance, it quickly becomes clear that starting over isn't going to be as easy as she'd hoped. One day, Linda is contacted by the last person she hopes to hear from, Mark.
He's not happy, and he wants to try and save the marriage. And it's not just one call. It's call after call after call. And these are not nice calls.
Linda worries that Mark's rage will make it unlikely they'll reach an amicable divorce.
This is wrong. This is f***ing wrong. You break my life enough.
Mark's angry messages make Linda very uneasy. She wants this to end peacefully, but it's very clear that Mark isn't going to respond in kind.
But how far is he willing to go to get what he wants? Even with Mark's threatening calls, Linda feels better knowing there are over 100 miles between them.
Where she lived was described as being remote. Her house is in an isolated end of a long driveway type of location with no close neighbors.
But she's about to learn that when it comes to a scorned lover, distance is no obstacle. On the morning of October 16th, 2007, as Linda's getting out of the shower, there's a loud noise.
Linda said that she heard her dogs barking and she looked out her window.
She looks towards a hill behind her house, and she's stunned by what she sees.
She said she spotted somebody on the hill with a rifle. The rifle was pointed right at her house, the person looking through the scope at her.
She's just gotten out of the shower. She's there vulnerable, naked, frightened, and wants to know who this is that's taken an aim at her.
Linda thinks the man on the hill bears a resemblance to her ex, Mark.
Linda takes a closer look and determines that this is not a guy who looks like Mark. This is Mark. And he's looking at me through the scope of a rifle.
But although she's left feeling powerless and terrified, Linda is reluctant to involve the authorities.
She said that she didn't report everything because she thought it was going to exacerbate Mark, and she was trying to deal with it on her own.
She probably thinks that she is the best person to know how to control Mark or deal with these temper flare-ups.
She chooses to keep the incident to herself. But will this fateful decision prove to have disastrous consequences? 3 days later, as Linda's getting ready to go out, she's confronted by an even more bone-chilling sight, only this time, it's right in front of her.
Evidently, Mr. Stover was standing in her house as she got out of the shower.
What are you doing here?
He's not outside the window. He's not on a hill. He's in the room right next to her.
I just want to talk, okay?
And he is begging. He is desperate. He wants to save this relationship, save this marriage.
According to Linda, Mark's emotional pleas quickly become aggressive.
He grabs her by the shoulders, and he's saying, I can't let you go. I'm not going to let you go. It was frightening.
Linda desperately tries to turn the situation around by pacifying her hostile ex.
Somehow she calms him. She gets him out of the house.
The incident is a wake-up call that reminds Linda that things between her and Mark are far from over.
She was hoping that Mark would just go away and she would have this new life.
But that wish will never come true. Not if Mark has anything to do with it. By November 2007, it's been over 2 years since Linda left Kicket Island, and she claims she's exasperated by Mark's stubborn refusal to let her go.
Linda realizes that she really has to move forward with this divorce, which has been kind of drawn out. Now is the time. She's got to move on.
One night, while out to dinner, she finds another powerful motivation to finally close the door on her troubled marriage. The owner of the restaurant happens to be one of Mark's oldest friends, and he stops by her table to say hello.
Mark had a really good friend named John. They had been friends for 35 years. He was the best man in their wedding.
As they start to chat, both John and Linda feel a strong chemistry flare up between them.
How are you?
During the course of the dinner, John gets kind of chummy with Linda. After dinner, they decide to get to know one another a little better.
So later that evening, the pair find themselves back at John's place.
According to Linda, if there was a spark of attraction at the restaurant, it really ignited into a flame once they met up after dinner. chemistry is undeniable. This is an extremely liberating moment for her. She wants to believe that this is the beginning of a completely new life.
As they become intimate, the last thing on Linda's mind is Mark, whom she believes is hundreds of miles away.
Linda and John are so caught up in the passion that they're experiencing during their encounter that they are oblivious to anything that might be happening around them.
But unbeknownst to the preoccupied lovers, they might not be alone. Could there be an unseen threat lurking in the shadows, watching their every move? The stakes are set for Linda and John's lustful affair to come to a sudden and dramatic end. Linda has left her husband, well-known dog trainer Mark Stover, but her jilted spouse refuses to let go, and according to Linda, he's been relentlessly harassing her ever since. Now, 2 years after their separation, Linda finds herself in bed with John, one of Mark's oldest friends.
Linda and John are in the bedroom, enjoying one another, very focused on one another.
Her encounter with John is a groundbreaking, almost watershed moment where she feels that she can launch into a new, romantic, blissful, sexually satisfying encounter and leave the last chapter of her life behind.
But for Linda, the euphoric feeling of being free is about to come to a screeching halt. At 7:30 the next morning, Linda is back at home when the phone rings.
Linda answers.
Hello?
And it's Mark. He seems a little more agitated than normal, she feels.
Linda claims Mark refuses to accept the terms of the divorce and demands even more money from the settlement. Then the conversation takes a disturbing turn.
According to Linda, he decides to quiz her about her activities from the night before. Hey, what did you do? Where were you?
Linda says she is increasingly frightened by Mark's hostile tone, but it's what he has to say next that really chills her blood.
Mark starts kind of detailing the events of the evening.
He talks about her dinner, the restaurant she was at, her friend, the wine on the table.
Linda is horrified as she realizes Mark is recounting every detail of her romantic evening.
He describes what she's doing in her intimate moments with John, and the conversation becomes more intense. Is he watching her constantly? Does he know her every move?
She's terrified. How could he possibly know these intimate details about her life?
It leaves her scared and wondering what her jealous ex might do next. Convinced Mark was spying on her the night before, Linda decides to investigate.
She went over to John's house and saw an area where a car could have been parked.
What she says she finds are tire tracks that are the same kinds of tracks that would be made by Mark's vehicle. And she also finds shoe prints that she says would have been made by the exact same shoes that Mark wears.
Linda's worst nightmares are slowly coming true. As it appears, her ex is determined to ruin her new life. Days later, her new lover weighs in on their prospects as a couple.
If Linda's sexual attraction for John had given her hope of a new relationship, a new life beyond Mark, those hopes are dashed when John sends Linda a letter saying that Mark's stalking behavior has him equally upset and he does not want anything more to do with Linda.
He says, I really fear for my own safety and for my kids.
Finally, Linda reaches a breaking point and vows to take action to stop her stalking ex once and for all. But how far is she willing to go to protect herself? First, she has her house rekeyed and deadbolts put in. Then she installs a new security system, and convinced that her life is in danger, she even goes one step further by informing the local sheriff.
We came to her house, reviewed her security measures. She'd installed security cameras around her house, and we gave her some suggestions on where to place those.
But there's a limit to what the authorities can do.
At that point, they didn't have any evidence. It was all he said versus she said.
With no other option, Linda takes matters into her own hands and becomes fully equipped to confront any threat with full force.
There was a firearm within reach anywhere you went in the house. Just everywhere there was firearms.
Linda even has a gun mounted to the wall behind a tapestry within arm's reach of where she lays in bed at night.
At this point, Linda doesn't hesitate to call the police whenever she fears Mark is lurking in the shadows. But her overzealous precautions will ultimately lead her down a very dangerous and deadly path. In a surprising turn, in January 2008, Mark finally agrees to the divorce settlement. But according to Linda, even though their marriage is now over, Mark refuses to move on, and instead becomes preoccupied with getting his hands on one specific memento from their past.
Mark Stover was obsessed with these wedding photos of him and Linda together. He made numerous calls about wanting him back.
Listen, I want you to go through every single thing that you own and look for those photos. There's no reason you should have them.
For Mark, it's really about taking them away from Linda. If she doesn't believe in the marriage, if she doesn't care enough about him, she should not have anything to remind her of the sanctity of marriage that he still believes in.
Linda tells Mark she no longer has the photos, hoping that this will be enough to end his obsessive badgering. And finally, on January 14th, 2009, after 2 years of hostility, the ordeal finally comes to an end when Mark and Linda's divorce is finalized, leaving Linda anxious to get her life back to normal.
She feels completely emancipated. Her brain is clear from that constant pall of worry that Mark might show up. She can move forward, date whoever she wants, sleep with whoever she wants. Linda is a free woman.
But little does she know, her persecution is far from over. In the early hours, one morning in March 2008, Linda's security camera captures the image of a mysterious man lurking outside her house. It seems that the divorce hasn't ended Mark's jealous obsession with his ex-wife, and an already volatile relationship is set to take a very violent turn. Linda claims that since leaving her husband Mark a few years earlier, he's been stalking her. She's now newly divorced from the famed Northwest dog trainer and trying to start a new chapter without him. But just as she thinks she's free, the threat becomes more dangerous than ever. Linda's security camera captures the image of a man walking towards her house in the early hours of the morning. She's convinced the trespasser looks exactly like Mark.
If Linda is correct, if it really is Mark walking around her house at 2:30 in the morning, what does this mean? Is he still psychologically obsessed with her? Wants to always be somewhere in her presence?
Linda is once again gripped by fear. But it won't be long before Mark's harassment gets him in serious trouble. Later that day, a neighbor discovers a stranger rummaging through the trash at the end of Linda's driveway.
This neighbor, knowing that Linda's going through all these issues with an ex-husband, goes and confronts him. Says, "Who are you and why are you doing this?"
The man doesn't identify himself, but the neighbor is sure it's Linda's ex, Mark.
The neighbor is like, "You know, this doesn't track. I'm gonna call Linda and see what she thinks about all this."
Before Linda can get there, Mark disappears. But he's tracked down by the sheriff a little while later and taken into custody. Although he's been caught with three bags of Linda's garbage, Mark is convinced he's done nothing wrong.
He admits that he was at Linda's place, and his position is that garbage on the curb is public property, and he's allowed to go through it.
But the officer doesn't agree.
He was cited, got a ticket for theft.
And when the facts are reviewed, police quickly uncover the nasty history between Mark and his ex-wife.
The prosecutor said, this is more than someone stealing garbage. This is a stalking case.
To avoid a trial, Mark reluctantly pleads guilty to the stalking charge. And even though he has no criminal record, he's given the stiffest sentence allowed.
He got a year's probation. He also got a month of electronic home monitoring. And there was also an automatic domestic violence protection order put in place for 2 years.
The protection order also means Mark has to give up some of his most cherished possessions.
He was forced to give up all of his guns. He loved guns. He was a hunter, fisherman, and he had to give his guns to a friend.
Will the police intervention now force Mark to leave Linda alone? Or will it spark a rage greater than anything she's seen before? On March 18th, 2008, Mark Stover turns 56. But on this day, celebrating is the last thing on his mind. Instead, he leaves a distraught message on Linda's answering machine.
When you have one partner stalking the other, this incredible pain is being stirred up by the idea that they're going to be alone again. If they feel they have done everything right, they've played by the rules, they have been loyal, they have been loving, what could they have done wrong?
As Mark struggles with the emotional aftermath of the divorce, Linda worries that she may still be the target of his malice.
She thought he might be suicidal. She felt like he had the potential to hurt her and himself.
Is this an idle threat? Or is Mark really thinking of killing himself? And even worse, taking someone else down too? By mid-spring, a couple of months have passed since Linda last heard from Mark. But in her most vulnerable moments, she still fears for her safety. To calm her anxieties, she has her home assessed by 40-year-old weapons and security specialist Michael Oakes.
Michael writes gun articles. He had more than 200, and he calls it force-on-force training, sort of close combat. And he said that he trained a lot of police officers in how to use that.
But the protection expert cuts a far from intimidating figure.
Michael is probably 5'6". He probably weighed 120 pounds, 110 pounds. It's a real small guy. He just seemed a little intimidated by being around anybody else. He was more of a recluse type person.
Michael becomes Linda's new confidant. As she shares her harrowing experiences of being harassed and threatened by her ex-husband,
Linda handed over some sort of dossier on all of the things that Mark was supposedly doing. And she was asking for help or protection or inquiring as to whether the security measures she had taken were enough.
For now, Michael is her gallant protector, making Linda feel safe and secure. But he'll soon take on a much more personal role. 2 months later, the Skagit County Sheriff's Office receives inside information alerting them to a pending drug deal. The caller identifies the dealer as having the last name Stover.
There's an anonymous call that Mark Stover supposedly is going to be delivering drugs on this specific day, at this specific time, driving this specific vehicle. And you get a tip like that in the sheriff's office, you investigate.
The next day, the deputy sheriff finds Mark in his car.
They pull Mark over. They inspect the vehicle.
An initial search turns up nothing. But on closer inspection, the policeman discovers something highly suspicious.
Underneath the vehicle, in a metal box, are a couple of joints and some low-grade cocaine.
Mark appears to be shocked.
His claim is that he does not have any knowledge of the drugs that they found.
And the deputy sheriff is inclined to believe him.
The circumstances are so odd. You know, this magnetic box, it could have been put there by anybody. It just doesn't seem realistic that he was going to be doing some sort of drug deal.
It wouldn't be too big a stretch of the imagination to think if someone's going to plant it on a locked van, that that'd be the easiest way to do it.
The evidence just doesn't add up, so no charges are ever filed. But it leaves Mark worried that someone is now out to get him. Is this a straightforward act of retaliation? Or does he need to prepare for an all-out war? By summer's end, Linda is spending much of her time with her new guardian, Michael. After meeting several times for coffee, their relationship has developed into something more than friendship.
They strike up this romantic relationship. They're kind of an odd match because Linda is quite a bit taller than him. He has four kids, a single dad. She's never had any kids.
A genuine and caring partner might be just what Linda needs after everything she's been through. But has she really put her safety in the hands of the right man? Around 8 a.m. on October 28, 2009, one of Mark's employees, Stephanie, arrives for work. While tending to the dogs at the kennels, she sees Mark wearing his signature hat and jacket off in the distance.
She saw Mark's station wagon backed up to the door, and she saw him carrying things out from the house into the back of the station wagon.
Stephanie watches as Mark gets in his car and starts down the driveway. But there's something about his behavior that's definitely unusual.
She noticed that the station wagon went zipping down the driveway very quickly.
And she's left puzzled about where Mark is going. A few minutes later, she makes her way up the driveway.
Stephanie went up to the house to use the bathroom. The door was unlocked.
As she walks in, she's hit by an unmistakable stench.
Immediately, the smell of bleach was just overpowering, and she knew something was wrong.
Even more alarming is what she sees in front of her.
She noticed some droplets of blood on the rug.
Stephanie wonders if the blood is from Mark's dog, Ding, who recently had stitches after surgery.
She thought that Mark maybe was rushing to the vet to take care of an emergency with Ding, which would explain him rushing out of the driveway like he did.
Seeing no sign of the dog or his master, Stephanie leaves, sensing something strange has happened. Did Mark make a mad dash to get help for his beloved dog? Or has she just stumbled upon a crime scene? Mark Stover was last seen in the early morning hours, loading something into the trunk of his station wagon. But when an employee discovers drops of blood and an overwhelming smell of bleach in his house, she's worried for his safety. As the day wears on, Mark's employees are increasingly puzzled. Mark is usually in touch constantly, but no one has seen or heard from him since he drove off hours earlier.
Mark had several appointments that day in Seattle, and Mark didn't make any of his appointments. That was very odd.
His staff try his cell phone repeatedly, but there's no answer, and he doesn't return their calls. Might their boss have followed through on the suicidal threats he left on his ex-wife's voicemail? The next morning, Stephanie returns to work, expecting to find her boss back at home. But when she's confronted by Ding, it becomes clear Mark's guard dog has been in the house all along.
When Stephanie saw Ding alone without Mark there, she knew something had gone wrong because he would never leave her alone.
Most alarmingly, the dog appears to have been shot and is bleeding.
Ding wouldn't allow Stephanie to get close and would growl and be aggressive toward her.
Stephanie tries again to reach Mark, but there's still no answer. And now, certain that more drastic measures need to be taken, she calls 911. Within minutes, the Skagit County Sheriff detectives arrive.
The first thing that they notice is this smell of bleach. The house appears to be immaculate. They notice some wet spots on the carpet and a vacuum with a tubing that's out.
As they continue their search, they find traces of blood on the walls and carpet.
Between finding blood and bleach and people not hearing from Mark, they think right away that something bad has happened, that there was foul play involved.
And it's not long before police get their first big lead. As word of Mark Stover's disappearance spreads, one sheriff remembers a phone call he received the previous day that now takes on grave importance.
They see a couple of cars parked in this area by a community building that's normally locked. Normally, nobody's supposed to park there.
The women observed the man transferring an item from the station wagon to the SUV. It appeared to be large, and it was wrapped in plastic.
At the time, police ran checks on both vehicles, and it emerged that one was registered to Mark Stover. The day before, the deputy tracked down the driver of the other car.
He saw a black SUV matching the description, so he pulls over the car.
The driver was identified as Linda's boyfriend, Michael Oakes.
Michael said that he had pulled over to the side of the road to make a phone call.
Although Michael appeared nervous, at the time, the sheriff had no reason to doubt his story.
He notices that the back is kind of full of stuff, but he didn't have any reason to search the car. He warns Michael about trespassing and lets him go.
But now, a day later, the officer realizes that the man he had detained for trespassing may well be connected to Mark's disappearance. Investigators find Michael at Linda's house. But when they move in to question him, they immediately notice his demeanor is off.
It wasn't the normal Michael Oakes that we had contact with. Usually he just sits in the background, doesn't say anything. This time he was more vocal.
Detectives ask Michael what he was doing near Mark's house the day before.
You could see him like wheels turning, and he started getting really agitated and really restless.
He says that he was over there and that he was visiting his ex-wife.
As detectives continue to question him, he grows noticeably edgier.
He's a little flustered, seems he wants to just get out from in front of these cops. And he says, I gotta get my medicine. It's out in the car.
Michael heads out to his vehicle. But he has no idea he's being observed by one of the sheriff's deputies out on the deck.
I see Michael outside the vehicle. I see him grab a white grocery plastic bag from the vehicle, and I confront him. He immediately throws that bag over the embankment. It's a 25-foot embankment.
The deputy scrambles down the embankment in search of the bag. What is Michael so desperate to hide? And could it hold the key to Mark Stover's ominous disappearance? Northwest celebrity dog trainer Mark Stover is missing. And his ex-wife's boyfriend, Michael Oakes, has been spotted with his car. Now he's just been caught trying to dispose of a mysterious bag that may give cops a lead into Mark's disappearance.
The deputy was really suspicious of what Michael was doing, and so he goes down the embankment and collects the bag.
What he finds inside is alarming.
They found a .22 caliber Browning pistol and a carpet swatch that smells like bleach.
There was now probable cause to arrest Michael Oakes for murder, so we arrested him.
With Oakes in custody, investigators get to work building their case against him. Since Mark is still missing, there's no evidence of how or even if he was killed. So they begin with a hunch.
Michael Oakes was responding to Linda's fears that in spite of the fact that he'd been found guilty of stalking, that she was still in grave danger of Stover coming and doing her harm, possibly killing her. So the theory is that he had decided that he was going to remove this threat from her life.
To support their suspicion, detectives start piecing all the evidence together, including some incriminating declarations Michael made to his former wife on the day Mark went missing.
Mr. Oakes indicated that if the police saw what was in his car, he would be going away for life.
Investigators also discover that Oakes was seen at a store near Mark's home around 5:15 a.m., where he bought camouflage clothing, a backpack, some weights, and rope, which police believe he used to dispose of Mark's body.
We know that he had the body in his car at that time because the two women who saw him at the Grange described seeing him transferring something that was about body shaped in plastic from the one car to the other.
On September 29th, 2010, Michael Oakes finds himself in court charged with Mark Stover's murder. But he's far from ready to admit he's to blame.
The defense position was that Mark was obsessive about getting back these wedding pictures of himself and Linda.
So did you bring the photos?
We don't have the photos.
So what are you doing here?
I came to talk about Linda. You have to leave her alone. You have to stop harassing her.
Leave Get out of my house!
This out. We have to work this out. Listen.
Oakes claims that an attempt to convince Mark that the wedding photos were destroyed ends in a fight, during which he's shot. Fortunately, his life is saved thanks to a bulletproof vest. Michael says he was then able to disarm Mark and, acting in self-defense, shoot him to death with his own gun.
Get out of my house.
You don't want to do this. You don't want to do this.
I do want to.
But the prosecution disagrees, stating that when Michael went round to Mark's house, he had no interest in placating him.
There's no indication, other than Mr. Oakes's words at trial, that there had been any kind of communication, contact, or anything between Mr. Oakes and Mr. Stover.
They suggest, in fact, he had something much more ruthless on his mind.
Prosecutors believe that he bought the supplies that he needed and went over there. He shot Ding. And then shot Mark.
Shell casings recovered from the scene add weight to the case building against Oakes.
Ballistics showed that those casings matched the gun that Michael had tried to dispose of. Detectives believe that those casings matched the bullets that were found in Ding.
There was also Mr. Stover's DNA in the blood from Mr. Stover's house and Mr. Stover's station wagon.
The prosecution also claims that Michael was spotted fleeing the crime scene by Mark's employee, Stephanie.
He cleaned up and took Mark's body and put it into Mark's own car, put on Mark's hat, and pretended to be him while he drove Mark's car out of the driveway. He then went to the Grange and got his own car, transferred the body, and then disposed of the body somehow, though they still have never located it.
According to the prosecution, the bullet found in Oakes's Kevlar vest came from his own gun, indicating that he shot himself after the murder to corroborate his fabricated account.
I think that Mr. Oakes left with a plan, the plan to execute Mr. Stover.
On October 22nd, 2010, after deliberating for 3.5 days, the jury convicts Michael Oakes of Mark Stover's murder.
We really have no idea what happened to Mr. Stover, other than it appears likely that he was shot, and we know that Mr. Oakes is the one that killed him. If the body were to be recovered, that might tell us exactly what happened in the house. It might tell us all manner of things that Mr. Oakes would not want us to know. I think that whether Linda genuinely believed she was in danger or not, that's what she expressed to Mr. Oakes. I think that Mr. Oakes wanted to prove himself to be her savior, her knight in shining armor. He was going to save her and keep her safe from this awful man that she's been describing.
Even with Michael Oakes behind bars, many questions remain in this twisted tale of jealousy and revenge.
I think it's really hard to make sense of this murder because Mark Stover had not had any contact with Linda whatsoever for the prior 18 months.
Mark and Linda seemed to have it all. You know, they owned this island, they had a successful business, they seemed to be in love. I think, you know, for two people to spiral this far out of control and to end in a tragedy like this, people just want to know why. There are so many questions, and I don't think they'll ever be answered.